Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities with the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. A state Supreme Court judge struck down New York's Equal Rights Amendment from the November ballot. Democrats who are counting on the measure to help generate voter turnout say they will appeal. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
The amendment would enshrine the right to abortion in the state's constitution and protect discrimination against gender and gender identity. State Supreme Court Justice Daniel Doyle did not address the content of that amendment, but he instead ruled that the Senate and Assembly's vote on it during a July 2022 session on gun safety violated required procedures. Floor votes require a signed opinion from the state's attorney general, which Doyle says was never written. The New York State Assemblywoman who filed the lawsuit, Marjorie Burns, is a conservative Republican who opposes abortion. But she says she sued along with two citizens because she believes things need to be procedurally correct. And she says it's up to the minority party in a Democratic-dominated state to hold the majority party accountable.
I did vote against the concurrent resolution both times in 2022 and in 2023. And should it come up again this year, which it might now in order to get the two consecutive votes and sessions in, I'll vote it against it again. But, you know, really, this lawsuit was 100% about the procedure that was utilized.
One day earlier at the Capitol, former GOP congressman and candidate for governor Lee Zeldin held a news conference urging New Yorkers to oppose the amendment. He says its passage would take away medical decisions from parents whose children seek treatments for gender dysphoria and would require transgender women to compete with biological women in school sports teams. The issue of transgender women in sports has become a flashpoint in recent culture wars.
From looking at history, that there has been no greater attack on women's rights and girls' rights in this state than this proposition.
Attorney General Tish James, in a statement, says the decision is disappointing but will be appealed. Governor Kathy Hochul, who has championed the Equal Rights Amendment, said in a statement that at a time when Donald Trump and his anti-abortion allies in New York are trying to undermine our rights, the decades-long fight to protect equality and reproductive freedom won't be derailed by one extremist judge. Senate Democratic Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins says she fully expects the appeal to be successful.
According to the reading of all of our very competent counsel, the lack of the AG's opinion does not negate the validity of our amendment. So we believe that we will be successful upon appeal, and we will certainly appeal that so the people will have the right to vote this November in terms of codifying our reproductive choice.
The state's highest court, the Court of Appeals, is dominated by liberal-leaning judges, although the outcome of any one case before the court can't be predicted. Democrats were already planning to spend millions of dollars on efforts to promote the amendment and to drive voter turnout in November. Several key congressional seats in the state and potentially the political control of the U.S. House of Representatives will be in play in New York this election season. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. This week, I sat down with New York State Assemblymember Deborah Glick, chair of the Committee on Environmental Conservation, to get her take on this week's negotiations over climate change and environmental bills. Deborah Glick, help us understand what's happening here. Maybe we should start with the Climate Change Superfund bill.
The Senate has just passed that. We've had it in committee. I'm hopeful that we'll be able to put that out shortly so that it can get a full hearing from the entire body. It attempts to ask polluters, fossil fuel companies, to pay into a fund to mitigate the damage that has resulted from the use of fossil fuels. And let me just say that for those listeners, we know that some corporations that have products that are damaging either to our health or to the environment know about that damage years before the public does. And they, in some instances, like ExxonMobil, they very clearly worked to undermine climate science and to cast doubt on what was understood to be damage from fossil fuels. And I will say that the first discussion in government about the impact of CO2 occurred back in the Kennedy and Johnson administration, when scientists were first indicating that there seemed to be an issue. And so here we are, all these years later, and the result of climate change is plain for everyone to see: increased storms, more damaging storms, rising sea levels, melting ice caps. The clock is ticking, and we have to do something. And those who have created the problem, just as we asked the tobacco industry to pay for increased access to health information and smoking cessation, we need to ask the fossil fuel companies to step up.
Yeah, and I understand from what I've read and knowing the legislature after 35 years that the lobbyists from those industries work hard to kill that legislation. The issue for me is, and I think it will be throughout our entire discussion about what gets in the budget and what doesn't get in the budget, with Democratic supermajorities and Democrats more likely to support climate change legislation, why should any of these bills fail?
Well, the budget is passed. These are the end of session focus on bills. Now, there will be some who will say that a particular bill is related to a budget item and therefore the budget is already done and we can't deal with it. But there certainly are opportunities to address significant policy initiatives. And that's what we're going to focus on for the next 4 or 5 weeks. And I think that what happens is, in some instances, there is a different perspective in each of the houses, and the houses have different ways of deliberating. The Senate has many fewer members in the majority, and their rules for getting things out of committee in terms of things bypassing committees is different than the Assembly. And we have over 100. They have like 42 people. And so everybody has to have their say. Certainly, it's always been a personal frustration that we want everybody to have their input, but sometimes we talk ourselves into a corner.
Do you feel the negotiations are always in good faith?
Well, you know, it's a delicate time of the year to try to suggest that that isn't always the case.
Right.
But obviously, I think what happens is that sometimes lobbyists make a case and the lobbyists may not be operating in good faith. They want to stop something. So from their point of view, their arguments may not be, in my humble opinion, accurate. And then you have to push back against misinformation and convince others that the information that they're receiving is inaccurate. But I'm an optimist, and I think that we have gotten great things done in the last year, and I think that in the end, we came out with a good budget for the environment. So the question is, was it in good faith? Ultimately, yes.
That's New York State Assemblymember Deborah Glick, a Democrat and chair of the Committee on Environmental Conservation. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. Meanwhile, New York State lawmakers back in Albany this week are generally optimistic about the remaining weeks of the legislative session. Dave Lucas with that story.
Assembly members say the late budget, approved about 3 weeks after the new fiscal year began April 1st, has set things back a bit as they rush to get non-budget bills accomplished. Democrat Pat Fahey of the 109th Assembly District says with about 18 session days to go, it'll be a sprint to the finish.
I have a number of priorities, including my short-term rental bill, which would bring tens of millions of dollars into the state and level the playing field for hotels. But just all I want is a state registry there, as well as having those Airbnb and VRBO folks paying their taxes. So that's a big one for me. I've also got the heat bill that fell out of the budget.
Fahey adds there's a host of other issues, including higher education and addressing health care shortages. Democratic Assemblyman John McDonald of the 108th District is also concerned about several health care items,
particularly in regards to the opioid crisis, allowing paramedics to start or initiate patients on Suboxone treatment, and also allowing hospitals. Think of when a person goes in with an overdose into the emergency room. Right now, by state law, they can only dispense one-day supply of Suboxone. The federal government made changes a couple of years ago. New York State has not adopted them yet. That would allow a clinician to administer provide 3 days' supply of Suboxone.
Democrat Phil Steck represents the 110th District. He chairs the Assembly Committee on Drug Abuse and Alcoholism.
We are trying to expand the type of opioid reversal agents that can be used so that anything approved by the Federal Food and Drug Administration can be used. We've also passed out as committee bills to require the Office of Addiction Services and Supports to report publicly online where the money from the Opioid Settlement Fund and the Opioid Stewardship Fund is going.
Steck says too many good bills with ample support don't make it through the legislature due to lack of time. McDonald and Steck both favor the Stop Addictive Feeds Exploitation for Kids Act, which regulates social media companies, mandating they stop feeding children content they haven't expressed interest in. Fahey is also focused on redesigning the Harriman office campus in Uptown Albany.
To put this in context, there are well over 10,000 bills in any two-year session cycle, and we're in the second of those 2 years. We often don't even pass 1,000 of those. So it's a lot to get through a very, very narrow chute. We are trying to work on amendments, trying to work with a host of folks. And again, as higher education chair, we also have collective bargaining agreements that have been settled at SUNY, not at CUNY. We'd like to get the funding for that so that we continue to strengthen higher education in this state.
McDonald says lawmakers intend to accomplish as much as they can before lawmakers leave for campaign season.
This budget, I think overall, once again, although it was a little bit late, is very solid. Doesn't raise taxes. It invests in health care and invests in services that our constituents want. We have a comprehensive policy that I think is going to have a positive impact on the housing challenges that most people focus on with New York City, but we also have affordability issues here in upstate New York. And I think, you know, some of the pilot programs, particularly in regards to the cities I represent, where vacant units, landlords can apply for assistance to bring those units back online, with the understanding that those units also will have some kind of a rent control component to it. It makes good sense, because at the end of the day, it's about building more inventory and making sure it's affordable.
For his part, Steck says time is being wasted by chapter amendments.
Where we pass a bill and the governor sends it back and says, I'm going to veto it unless you make this change. And the governor is doing that so often that the first 2 months of session get taken up with passing chapter amendments, which are really bills that we've already passed. And it just prevents us from doing a lot of the other work that we should be doing.
The legislative session is scheduled to end June 6.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas. Pro-Palestine encampments at three college campuses in the Hudson Valley came down last week, almost as quickly as they went up. One, amicably, but two, as a result of police enforcement and mass arrests. Now, student protesters and administrators are wondering how to move forward. The Legislative Gazette's Jesse King with more.
An An encampment of student, faculty, and community protesters at SUNY New Paltz's Parker Quad was up for about 2 days before state police arrived Thursday night with batons, dogs, and a helicopter to break it up. More than 130 people were arrested, including Teo Ertz, a STEM student from Sullivan County.
It was incredibly difficult, upsetting, and traumatizing to watch the people who I had just a few hours earlier had a meal with, hugged, painted signs with, read books with, just being absolutely brutalized.
Ertz says the protesters were calling on SUNY New Paltz to completely divest from companies tied to Israel, specifically a technology company, Siemens, in response to the country's continued bombing in Gaza. When police arrived, much of the group decided to sit down and lock arms, but Ertz volunteered to walk around the quad and bring any protesters who might become injured to the group's self-appointed EMTs. If anyone was injured, though, they didn't receive a hand from Ertz. Ertz was arrested early on.
I was just praying that everyone would be okay by the end of this.
Ertz says they were charged with a violation of trespassing. In the run-up to the arrests, SUNY New Paltz said the use of overnight tents on campus without authorization is a violation of the student handbook, and that administrators repeatedly tried to de-escalate the situation by speaking with protesters. In a statement Friday, President Darrell Wheeler called the decision to bring in law enforcement, quote, among the most difficult I have had to make at any point in my career, end quote. Evan Holland Shepler, Democratic chairman for the Village of New Paltz, was also arrested Thursday.
What did this accomplish? I guarantee you they're going to feel less faith in their university. To me, it expended so much time, so many resources, and traumatized so many young people in a formative time for nothing.
Since October, more than 34,000 Palestinians have been killed in Israel's bombing, according to Gaza health officials. Israel says the offense is necessary to root out Hamas terrorists, who killed more than 1,200 Israeli citizens on October 7th. But pro-Palestine demonstrators in the U.S. have equated the bombing to genocide. Encampments in solidarity with Gaza have sprung up at colleges across the country in recent weeks, demanding that administrators effectively join the, quote, boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement by disclosing and cutting financial ties with Israel. Last week, dozens of protesters at Columbia University were arrested after a group took over the campus's Hamilton Hall. As police broke up the encampment in New Paltz, officers also responded to a similar protest at Purchase College in Westchester County. There, about 70 students and faculty were arrested just hours after starting an encampment. Another attempt at an encampment was broken down Sunday morning, with the college announcing the creation of a, quote, protest zone on campus for students to use between 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. Purchase has cited the campus's quiet hours as a reason to take down the encampments. In a statement at WAMC, Purchase President Milagros Pena says, quote, I look forward to having the chance to finding common ground and moving forward as a campus community, end quote. Numerous officials, including New York Governor Kathy Hochul, have voiced support for efforts to clear encampments, saying they are restricting campus functions close to final exams and commencement and infringing on the rights of other students. Last week, Allison Esposito, a Republican candidate in New York's 18th congressional district, called for an encampment at Vassar College in Poughkeepsie to come down.
While we embrace peaceful protest, we cannot allow rules to be broken or crimes to be committed. No violence against Jews, no violence against the students, no stopping of graduation ceremonies. None of that should be allowed to happen, and I call on the president to do their job and to stop these protests now.
On Saturday, student protesters at Vassar announced that they were taking down their encampment after reaching an agreement with College President Elizabeth Bradley and other administrators. In a statement on Instagram, the group says it does not view the agreement as a victory, but as, quote, the most strategic decision we can make in order to further our efforts for divestment and Palestinian liberation, end quote. According to a copy of the agreement posted online, the private college plans to, quote, create more transparency around its independent contractors, including potentially publishing a list of its major contractors online. Furthermore, Vassar has agreed to allow 4 students to meet with its executive committee and present a proposal for divestment from some military contractors, with an eventual vote on the proposal by the Trustee Investor Responsibility Committee and the Board of Trustees either later this month or in October. In a statement Monday, Vassar College confirmed students had taken down their tents after a, quote, thoughtful discussion, adding, quote, students are now focusing on ending the year, including final exams and papers, senior theses and projects, and welcoming seniors' family members for commencement. Any occurrences of discriminatory harassment will be addressed according to the college's policies, end quote. Back at SUNY New Paltz, Ertz says the past week's events have shattered their sense of community on campus. They say they will be back next year. They can't afford to transfer. But getting arrested certainly put a damper on their college experience.
I was very hopeful that my time here at New Paltz would be nothing short of a dream, but this has turned it into a nightmare. I've talked to a few of my other classmates who just say that they can feel it in the air that something terrible has happened here, and I don't think it'll ever be the same.
By way of disclosure, Vassar College is home to WAMC's Hudson Valley News Bureau. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Jesse King.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. Lake Champlain was the site of several Navy battles during the Revolutionary War and the War of 1812. The general consensus had been that it was best to keep shipwrecks in the lake because the cold, clean water helped to preserve them. But invasive species and climate change are increasing the risk of deterioration, and some are calling for the vessels to be removed from the lake. The current focus is on the Spitfire, which sank after a Revolutionary War battle, but raising it could take decades and millions of dollars. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains.
The Spitfire is a gunboat that sank when the Americans retreated after the Battle of Valcour Bay on October 11, 1776. In 1997, a survey team from the Lake Champlain Maritime Museum found the gunboat on the lake bottom in pristine condition. The Clinton County Historical Association hosted a recent talk by Lake Champlain Maritime Museum Director Emeritus Art Cohn on efforts to raise the Spitfire from the lake bed.
I was in this room 7 years ago to announce our first level of concepts, of thoughts about how we best preserve this boat. I was part of the team that discovered the Spitfire 27 years ago. And unlike probably your imagination that, oh, on the day he discovered the boat, they were jumping all over the place and opening the champagne. And I can tell you it was the opposite of that. It was a sobering reality that had to be taken care of, managed in the best possible way we knew how to do that. The Spitfire is really right in the middle of an evolving societal issue. Who gets to manage these shipwrecks, and how do we best preserve them for this and future generations?
One attendee felt if the Spitfire is raised, it should remain in the community to help increase tourism and historical awareness. Cohn said while that is not the primary reason to remove it from the lake water, it is a substantial secondary purpose.
That's not why we would do it, but I think that's important to look at that. This boat fought at the Battle of Valcour Island under the command of Benedict Arnold with a cast of characters that are important to understand. So I think there's some really high values to be served there.
The project to raise the Spitfire began in 2017. Outside the venue, before he began his presentation, Cohn explained that a 22-year timetable and estimated $44 million cost have not changed.
Some of the logistics have changed to make it easier. New York has expressed an interest in possibly taking a leadership role. And so it's actually consolidated some of the issues for us. And so I think that's part of the new examination that we're having at this time.
Cohn says he has been doing nautical archaeology for over 40 years and until now has never recommended that a boat be recovered from the lake's waters.
For most of my career, I've been very vocal about leave them where they are unless there's a compelling reason to talk about disturbing them. Leave them in situ. That's the best option. We built replicas so that we didn't have to raise originals. By the same token, based on the environmental changes, and it's driven by now that we have invasive mussels in Lake Champlain, we've done a study, we can predict that those mussels will encrust this boat and they will degrade it. So we've got a little bit of a window to plan.
Cohn adds they are reviewing other shipwreck projects and the engineering required to successfully raise the Spitfire.
It's a Champlain Valley project, New York, Vermont, and Quebec sort of working together. We have a network of historic sites from Chambly to Saratoga and every place in between. We think that it will empower the region. But at the end of the day, the most important consideration from my point of view is what can we determine is best for the resource? How do we best preserve this object for future generations and make sure that it is doing the best job it can at sharing its stories with us?
The Spitfire is protected by the Sunken Military Craft Act. It is in water deep enough, and its specific location has not been divulged, to protect it from recreational divers. Another gunboat, the Philadelphia, was raised from the bottom of Lake Champlain in 1935 and is on display at the Smithsonian Museum.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen to the Legislative Gazette anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2419. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gostino. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.